well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be spending some time with our friend Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts. A lot of stuff to talk about. Some good, some bad, some downright ugly. The good, Goals 250 event coming up on June 13th in Boxborough, Massachusetts. I will be there, and so will a lot of folks. John Comerford from NRA ILA. You've got Adam Kraut from Second Amendment Foundation, who will be on hand as well. Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition, helping to challenge Massachusetts Chapter 135. We got a big referendum coming up in November. We'll be talking with Toby Leary about that here in the coming days as well. But a great conversation with Jim about some of the celebrations that will be taking place, but also some of the challenges that gun owners in Massachusetts are facing, and even those gun owners traveling through the state of Massachusetts. Take a look and a listen. Jim, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again, sir.
Well, thanks again. Welcome back to the Second Amendment Battleground State, and it just continues here. You know, how long have we been using that term, Second Amendment Battleground State? Way too long, right?
Way too long, yeah.
Way
and
too long.
I hate to tell you, but I am joining you from another Second Amendment Battleground State, state of Virginia, where, you know, we've had really decent gun laws for as long as I've lived here, since 2004. That is all about to change come July the 1st. We're going to be like South Massachusetts here before long, Jim.
It's crazy. You know, Cam, I was actually talking to some folks down in Houston at the NRA annual meeting, and I said, you know, the irony is, you know, what, 150 years ago, people were fleeing north for freedom, and now people are fleeing south for freedom. So that's how bad things have become up here.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, you know, as we were talking off air, I mean, basically anywhere where the Democrats are seizing power, they are pedal to the metal going after, you know, our right to keep and bear arms. I mean, you can look at what's happening in Virginia, where 13 major gun control proposals about to become law. Rhode Island, they banned, you know, the sale and manufacture of so-called assault weapons last year. They're already trying to ban the possession of these firearms this year. And, you know, folks need to be ready. I mean, this is a critically important election year. We say that every cycle, but it's absolutely the case. And all you have to do is look at what's going on in you know, states where Democrats have seized control or have control. And it is just a nightmare for our right to keep and bear arms.
Well, it's interesting, Cam, because for, you know, for as long as I've been around, you try to stay nonpartisan.
Right.
But how do we do that now? But the only reason I'm still nonpartisan is that the Democrats attack us and the Republicans don't do anything to help us. So,
I mean, listen, I'm still one of those people. I would love for this to be a nonpartisan issue.
Yeah.
I look back 15 years, 20 years ago, a quarter of the Democrats in Congress were A-rated by the NRA. A blue dog Democrat was, you know, a real thing. There were legitimate differences between those Democrats and Republicans. But, you know, when it came to the right to keep your arms, you know, you did not have to be anti-gun to be a Democrat within the good graces of your political party. Now you absolutely do. And, you know, that is just a political reality. But at the same time, the right to keep and bear arms is a right of the people. It exists regardless of your political party. And I'm hoping that, you know, there are Democrats, rank and file Democrats, that can, you know, turn the party around. But for right now, I mean, as you say, it's Democrats on the attack, and Republicans defend, you know, your right to keep and bear arms?
You know, oddly enough, many years ago, and, you know, Barney Frank right now, who's in really bad health, I understand. But many years ago, he actually said if the Democratic Party controlled the unions and the Second Amendment vote, they would never lose an election. So they went completely the other way. But, you know, it is what it is. It's just, we are a divided nation. Yeah. But anyway, things are still stepping up here in Massachusetts. So,
yeah, and we got a lot to talk about. I do want to let folks know, here in about 5 weeks, we've got the Goal 250 event in Boxborough, Massachusetts. This is going to be a great night. I am so excited to be a part of this. And you've got a stellar lineup, Jim, of speakers from across the Second Amendment spectrum that'll be there in attendance.
Yeah, I don't think you'll ever see a lineup like this anywhere in the country. Certainly, I have not. You know, we have yourself, obviously, which, you know, you're gonna have your assistant Mo Palmer with you for the entire night.
Excellent.
Matter of fact, we had our annual meeting breakfast for Goal, two Sundays ago, and it was her birthday. So it was more of a Mo day than it was a Goal day. So that's all right. I mean, yourself's going to be there. We're going to have John Comerford from NRA ILA. We're going to have, Adam Kraut from the Second Amendment Foundation. We're going to have Cheryl Todd from Gun Free Radio. And our newest is Valentina Green from Naturally Armed. So she's going to come down and talk with us. And, of course, Toby Leary from the Civil Rights Coalition will get up and give us a talk. So it's going to be a lineup. It's going to be a great night.
Well, you know, I was really honored to be a part of the events last year, the 250th anniversary of the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Goal celebrated in a big way, and now we get to celebrate the 250th anniversary of our nation. So it's going to be a great night. If folks want to get tickets, I'm guessing there are still some tickets still available?
Oh, yeah. Yep, there's tickets available. You just go to goal.org, and you'll see right on the top banner there, you know, the 250 celebration. So it's going to be great. Now, ironically, Cam, last year when you were here, during the day, of course, they had the reenactments at the Bridge of Concord and all of that and celebrating the freedom. But in celebrating the freedom last year, they had a fenced-off area called the First Amendment Zone, which to this day I find so ironic that here we are celebrating our, you know, independence, but over there you can say what you want to say, but not over there.
Right. Well, this will be a First Amendment zone. The Gold.
Yes, it will.
In, Boxborough. Yeah. Like I said, I'm looking forward to it. You guys always know how to throw a great party. And it's not just going to be speakers, right? I'm guessing you guys are going to have a silent auction.
We'll have big raffles. We'll have auctions. Hornady just came through in droves. They've been a great sponsor of Goal. Matter of fact, they're the sponsor of our recording studio here. And boy, they sent a pallet of stuff for the event. And there's three safes. There's a bunch of lock boxes, huge range bags. I mean, they did it up. Mossberg donated three shotguns.
Wow.
One of them's the door prize. So yeah, people are really coming out for this one. It's going to be an event to see. And we were promised by the hotel the AC will work this time. Because you remember last year was a little warm.
We got through it. But you know, it was also in April. This is going to be in June. Yeah. So that's good to know. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, in fairness, the hotel said the AC couldn't keep up with all the hot air in the room.
All right, so there are a couple of items beyond the Goal 250 event that I wanted to talk with you about. By the way, Goal's website, you do a fantastic job of keeping up and informing folks about what's going on in Massachusetts. And there are a couple of stories here that I wanted to touch on. One, you guys posted a couple of days ago, a Goal to defend resident license to carry holder on assault-style firearm charges. And, you know, Jim, as you and I have talked in the past, Goal doesn't generally get involved in, you know, individual cases where somebody is facing charges. I know that you did with the veteran,
Kyle,
who, and I'm blanking on his last name right now, unfortunately, but, you know, he and his girlfriend driving from Arizona to New Hampshire, they were stopping at DoorDash. He had guns that were legal to own in Arizona, legal to own in New Hampshire, but, you know, facing criminal charges for having them there in Massachusetts. What made you decide to get involved in this particular case that we're now talking about, this new case?
This is, you know, like what we put out. I said, this is the bomb we've been waiting for it to drop. This is the perfect storm of a case that has so many layers to it under these new laws. If you look at the charges filed against this young man, 23-year-old college student, he is facing over 100 years in prison. And for stuff that should just be an everyday gun owner's safe, right? And, you know, there was one charge of improper storage because he had a loaded handgun close to where he could get it. And, of course, when the officers entered the house, they were serving a protection order. Mm-hmm. Which was dropped the very next day by a judge. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, hopefully spiteful. But there are so many things here that we have been talking about since day one. And Cam, we've actually gotten quite a bit of flack, especially on social media, calling us, you know, taking the extreme point of view just to scare people and raise money. Well, look at this young kid now who's facing over 100 years in prison for guns that he lawfully bought and possessed. So the serialization thing is now mandated in Massachusetts. All guns, you know, other than pre-68 guns and antiques have to be serialized and registered. That does not take effect fully until October 2nd of this year.
Okay.
But some of the charges he is facing, because he had unfinished lowers, AR lowers and uppers, they weren't serialized. And I think there was also a pistol frame that he was working on that hadn't been serialized yet. So he is facing 6 counts of untraceable firearms. They are also saying there's a brand new term in this in the arrest report that it was completed lower. Never heard that before. And what they're saying is under mass law, completed lower means that it could be readily put together as a working firearm, and therefore it's an assault weapon. Now, keep in mind that just a few months ago in the Firearm Control Advisory Board, I brought up the discussion of unfinished frames and receivers, and I was told point blank, and it's in the minutes of the meeting, that it's perfectly fine to import, sell, and buy new AR lowers as long as you don't turn them into a semi-automatic AR. In other words, like a bolt action or a fixed mag or something.
Okay.
Well, guess what? Sorry. So in Massachusetts, so for people who don't know now, in Massachusetts, an unfinished frame, not 80%, it just says unfinished frame or receiver, is now a firearm. So you remember last year at the event that you came to, Cam, we actually auctioned off a block of aluminum with a serial number on it.
Yeah.
And a model number on it. And it was kind of a joke, but kind of not, because it depends upon how far they want to push this. And if you really, as we have said since day one, and now, you know, we're being, it's coming true, unfortunately, that an unfinished AR lower could be considered an M4 because it's unfinished. So what is happening now post Bruin and post Chapter 135, which was the new laws in 2024? There is a complete reset in jurisprudence in Massachusetts. The district attorneys and the judges are acting like there is no history on the Second Amendment in Mass, and they are starting from scratch. The killer, though, is that they're making, and I've had to learn a whole lot of new terms in the last year and a half, Cam, that you have to, even if there's an exemption in the law, you have to use it as an affirmative defense, which means you have to go to trial and prove the exemption, or prove when you bought these guns it was legal to possess them, or prove that the gun you are possessing is legal. There is no looking at the law and going, oh, no, that's simply not the case. You know, this person was fine. That's not the way it's being handled now. And I know people get very upset with us when we constantly tell them, be extraordinarily careful. It's awful easy to talk tough behind a keyboard, but when you're facing 100 years in prison, you can scream unconstitutional all you want. But even if you win, you lose. And Mike Harris coined the phrase here, the process is now the punishment. You may never see a day in jail, but your life is destroyed. And, this is intentional in the state of Massachusetts.
Well, I'm glad to see that you guys are getting involved in this. This arrest report also contained a phrase that I had never seen before, a completed Glock slide that was capable of being converted into a fully functional firearm. So I know about the frames, I know about lowers and uppers, but I didn't realize that a slide could be considered a firearm in Massachusetts. All right. Well, we'll be definitely paying attention to this case going forward.
Yeah.
There's another issue. Massachusetts war on non-resident gun owners continues.
Ugh.
And you say that Gold not directly involved in this case, but you are warning non-residents about the danger of traveling in or through the Commonwealth. This is a couple of people who were, I guess, as you say, they left a job in Kentucky. They're going up to New Hampshire to work on a store. An individual from North Carolina was behind the wheel. There were problems with registration. So the three individuals, couldn't use the car anymore. The vehicle had to be towed. Inventory took place. There were two handguns that were discovered. According to you guys, one in a bag that the arrest report stated was under the driver's direct control. So she was subsequently arrested, has now been charged with multiple felonies. Dan Hagen, who works closely with gunners, actually said that Denisha Harris is a hardworking woman from South Carolina who was on her way to New Hampshire for employment. Now she's charged with felonies. What happened to her and others like her is an absolute disgrace for Massachusetts. And, Jim, I mean, we did see the ATF announce one of these proposed rules this week that would, clarify under the Firearms Owners Protection Act, if you're traveling from a place where you can legally own a gun to a place where you can also legally own a gun, you can do things like stop for gas. You can stop overnight at a hotel. You can grab something to eat. These incidental stops. But you still have to have that firearm, unloaded outside of your immediate possession. Got to be, generally locked up in a trunk or at least in the back. Be something like that. Sounds like that wasn't the case here. But again, when we're talking about the right to keep and bear arms, why does that right stop at Carolina or South Carolina state line, right?
Here's the interesting thing, Cam. Under the new laws, as bad as they are, they specifically put a piece in there that allowed non-residents to travel through the state while carrying a loaded firearm. So what's going on here? Kyle was the same way, right? It was a traffic stop that resulted in the car being towed. This is the third one, actually, because there was one down near Springfield as well, where a person that was traveling for work got in a hit and run accident, and they had to tow the car, and they actually went to the hospital and charged her right there on the hospital bed in the ER. So this is a pattern. And in this case, these folks, I'll take their word for it. They were trying to get to New Hampshire from Kentucky, and they were coming through the highways in Palmer, Mass. And anybody who's been in Palmer, Mass knows it is very easy to miss your exit and get off into the hinterlands. And, it almost sounds like a 1970s or 80s horror movie. I got off the wrong exit. And what happened? So, and here's a situation again where there was a problem with the registration, and now she's facing felony charges. Her life's going to be destroyed if and Dan Hagen's on that case as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully he can help her. It's very difficult for Gold to get involved in non-resident cases. Kyle's was really, we jumped on that because he was being detained without bail. He didn't even offer Kyle bail. And he was in there for 4 months. And that's why we jumped on that particular one. But we continue to warn non-residents, don't come through Massachusetts with a gun. Unless you have a non-resident license to carry, which is actually called a temporary license to carry, do not come through this state with a gun. Because as soon as you get pulled over, they're going to claim, you're no longer traveling through because now you're stopped or, you're over here doing this. In Kyle's case, they were doing DoorDash, so that's not traveling through. In this case, she got off the highway and she was driving slow, so you're not traveling through. They're coming up with any excuse to file massive charges against non-residents. And we had those two cases go before the state high court, Donnell and Marquis, and they wrote those cases side by side because they referred to one another. And they said, well, this case happened before we changed the laws, so we'll dismiss that. But this one happened after we changed the laws, so the charges are good. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And it's not easy to get one of those temporary permits. I mean, as a non-resident,
no.
As I understand it, at some point in the application process, you do have to travel to Massachusetts. You do have to sit for an in-person interview, right? So, you know, somebody who may just be incidentally traveling through the state, who on earth is going to do that, right? I mean, you know, and if you don't even realize that you may have to go through Massachusetts on way up to, you know, visit family in Maine or whatever. You know, it takes months to get one of these permits. Again, you've got to make a separate trip entirely to the state to sit for that in-person interview. It's completely unreasonable to think that, you know.
And it's $100 a year. Shut. And when you renew, it takes anywhere from 6 months to a year to renew.
And so, how long does it last?
A year. You know, so, you know, Mike Harris is famous for saying, you know, if it takes you a year to renew, then essentially you've been denied your license for a year.
Right.
It's a deprivation of rights as you travel through Massachusetts. It is insane. You know, I cannot warn people enough across the country. Virginia, where you are, you're already experiencing it. Other states, folks, this is coming. And what I hear across the country, too, is always interesting. It's like, well, just vote these people out of office. Oh, you know, it's unconstitutional, so don't comply. It's easy to say from behind a keyboard, you know, but when the Democrats have a supermajority here and the Republicans, for the most part, the leadership won't stand up for you and even make a statement, it's tough. And we have, you really have no redress in any matter in Massachusetts as a citizen, because all three branches of government work together. I mean, I still remember a case we had before the state high court. And I was floored because in the case, in the actual written decision, the court said, we're going to defer to the wisdom of the legislature in this matter. Excuse me? That is the opposite of what your job is. You know, so it's just insane. But and even the First Circuit Federal Court, good luck.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah, we just saw the waiting period decision in Beckwith versus Frye. That was just absolutely insane. That you know, the right to keep your arm does not include the right to acquire a firearm. So, any preconditions that any state wants to attach to you buying a gun, that's fine. Doesn't implicate the Second Amendment at all. Yep. And speaking of court decisions, I have to bring up this. I hadn't seen this YouTube page, so I'm really glad you guys are talking about this. Fake news on Supreme Court licensing decision. You say that you guys have gotten a lot of inquiries about a supposed 9-0 Supreme Court decision regarding gun licensing, right? And I guess the decision supposedly says that gun licenses are unconstitutional.
Well, it's, you know, we've been getting emails, and I was on a Zoom meeting with our affiliated clubs the other night, and people, why isn't Gold talking about this? And why, you know, why haven't you told everybody that they don't need licensing anymore? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they, oh, it's all over the internet. You know, this fight's over. And I'm like, well, first of all, the Supreme Court and the Second Amendment would never be 9-0 on anything. You know, Jackson votes against the right to chew bubblegum, for crying out loud. So he's not going to vote for anything as far as civil rights goes. We had to dig into it a little bit. And yesterday, Mike Harris found the YouTube channel. He goes, Jim, this is all AI generated. Why somebody's even doing this, who knows? But they're certainly stirring it up nationwide that people think the fight is over. And it's like, guys, it's all fake. It's all fake.
Oh,
but you and I both know once somebody gets a hold of something on the internet, you know, it goes around the world 10 times before somebody goes, hey, you may want to look at that a different way.
Yeah, no, so, you're absolutely right. And that's why I'm so glad you are bringing this up, because like I said, I hadn't heard about this. I got to go do some digging. I went to the page, 40,000 subscribers or 41,000 subscribers, page, which is, you know, bad enough.
Right.
A Supreme Court emergency ruling to end all firearm permits in the United States. Supreme Court 6-3 emergency order changes everything. Just absolute.
Yeah.
Bull feathers, let's call it, from this.
Right. Meeting. Yes.
So I appreciate, you know, you warning folks about this. I think this is only going to get worse as time goes on. The AI slop and the untruths that are put out there so easily, but I am glad that you guys are countering that. And again, just, you know, part of the great work that Gun Owners Action League is doing in Massachusetts and really for gun owners all across the country. So, you know, again, if you are a Massachusetts resident, if you live in Connecticut or Rhode Island or New Hampshire or Vermont or Maine or, you know, the eastern part of New York, and you can make the drive over to Boxborough, Massachusetts on June 13th to help celebrate the 250th birthday of the United States with some of your fellow gun owners, I would certainly encourage you to do so. Goal 250. I just go to goal.org. You can find information there on the homepage. And Jim, I am looking forward to seeing you in a little bit more than a month and getting a chance to hang out with Mo and all of the rest of the great folks from Gun Owners Action League. I can't wait to make it back up to Massachusetts. I never thought that I would say that, but
they, no. Well, now it doesn't really matter, does it? Because you're in Virginia, so
you know, right out of the frying pan into the fire, so to speak.
Yeah. So I'm gonna need some fun, Cam, because I got the bad news when I was in Houston that I was reappointed as chair of the bylaws committee. So, woo, there's some fun there. I'll tell you what, for the next year, but. Nothing like 6-7 hours of bylaw meetings, you know, to really get you riveted.
Yeah. Well, you're doing Yeoman's work there, too. And we probably should have you back to talk about what's going on with the bylaws and the reform efforts that are continuing there at some point in the future. But for now, Jim, as always, man, I really appreciate your time today. And I look forward to seeing you in person here in a few weeks.
All right. Thanks, brother.
My thanks to Jim for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again very soon. And do want to thank him for talking about that bogus YouTube channel. I'm going to be writing about this at Bearing Arms later today because it's nonsense. I mean, and it could get people in trouble. This website is making up court decisions. All permits invalidated. Oh, no, they haven't been. Believe me, we would be all over that story. Not only making up fake decisions, making up fake cases that led to fake decisions. The AI slop is, and this isn't even just AI slop. I mean, this is just downright dangerous stuff. And unfortunately, I do think we're going to be seeing more of this AI nonsense here in the future. All right, let's turn to a couple of stories that are actually true, have taken place. Today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Omaha, Nebraska, where two teens allegedly held bus passengers at gunpoint over the weekend. The local TV station talking about a rise in youth violence because the local district attorney there says that it is as bad in Omaha as he has ever seen it. Douglas County Attorney Don Klein said youth crimes higher than he's ever seen before. He said crimes are getting more violent, more frequently involving firearms. In this particular case, 17-year-old Maurice Smith Walker, now charged as an adult for allegedly holding two Metro Transit bus passengers at gunpoint on Saturday. The prosecuting attorney says the juvenile court's jurisdiction ends when a person reaches the age of maturity, which in Nebraska is 19. So he says the closer people get to that age, the more difficult it becomes to send somebody to juvenile court because the process itself takes time. Well, this guy shouldn't be going to juvenile court at 17 anyway. Yeah, he's old enough to know better. Klein highlighted programs to rehabilitate youth at places like Boys Town, but he said the only places for what he calls violent young people are basically juvenile detention centers. In this case, the Douglas County Youth Center. In this case, the 17-year-old in question apparently has been in and out of that youth center, has a pretty extensive criminal history for 17. And the judge in this case gave Smith Walker a $250,000 bond, which is, you know, decently high, I guess. Interestingly enough, KETV in Omaha reports that right now the Douglas County Youth Center is essentially the only place that violent teen suspects like Smith Walker can go. There is a new facility in Douglas County, the Youth and Family Support Center, that was built downtown, but it's empty. It's not in use, apparently, because of financing issues. And so even though it's been completed since 2024, it's not in use. There are 64 beds in that space, and none of them are occupied, which is crazy. KETV says that people can't move into the new space until the capacity numbers are down. Right now, the Douglas County Youth Center is 68 youth. I guess I don't understand I don't understand what the capacity issue is. If you've got 64 beds, zero of them are being used, seems to me like you don't have an issue with overcapacity at that point or overcrowding. But I don't know. There must be some intricacies there. But again, here you've got a 17-year-old with a lengthy criminal history, illegally, allegedly, getting his hands on a gun, holding people at gunpoint. Maybe now the criminal justice system treats this individual seriously. But given the fact that he's 17, maybe not. Maybe he gets another slap on the wrist, treated again as a juvenile. And the emphasis should be on rehabilitation, not incarceration, despite the lengthy criminal history that he already possesses. I don't know. We'll keep our eyes open on any details from this situation there in Omaha, Nebraska. Today's Armed Citizen story from Mount Dora, Florida, where a homeowner shot an intruder in a domestic dispute. This happened over the weekend. And it turns out the intruder married to a woman who is in the homeowner's residence. This was a Sunday morning, about 8:45. A Saturday morning, I guess, about 8:45 in Mount Dora. Deputies called out on reports of a shooting. When they got there, they encountered two witnesses, Amelia Padilla and Christopher Lane, who were on the front porch. When they went inside the home, they located a man named Michael Lutz, who was suffering from gunshot wounds to both arms as well as his torso. He was taken to a local hospital there. A man named Corey Latterell identified himself to deputies as the shooter, according to a police report. He said the handgun that was used was on a nightstand in his bedroom. There was also a second handgun that was discovered in the same room. According to Latterell and the witnesses there, Michael Lutz, had approached the residence, started knocking and banging on the front doors and windows, but managed to get inside through an unlocked sliding glass door in the rear of the home. And once he was inside, he reportedly kicked in a bedroom door, which is when the homeowner fired two shots, striking him. According to local media, the man who was shot, reportedly the husband of the homeowner's girlfriend, I guess the two were in the process of getting a divorce. Lutz was conscious and breathing when emergency responders arrived. He was taken to the local hospital for treatment, but his current condition has not been released. The Stoka Sheriff's Office in Lake County, Florida, says there is a warrant for Lutz's arrest. There are deputies at the hospital with him. Right now, charged with one count of burglary, will be held without bond and will be arrested once he's released from the hospital. So, I understand emotions are high when marriages are ending and, you know, one party moves on before the other is ready. Doesn't give you the right to go into somebody's home and confront your spouse, even if you all are separated. Even if you want to reconcile, doesn't give you the right to do that. And on the other hand, Mr. Latterell was well within his rights to shoot in self-defense when a guy kicked in his bedroom door in his own home there over the weekend. So we'll keep our eyes open for any updates out of Lake County, Florida in that situation as well. And finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing to residents in eastern Idaho, who saved a woman from a burning house fire just a couple of days ago. Pretty scary situation. SVI News reports that a woman in Star Valley is continuing to recover after receiving multiple injuries from this house fire, but they say the outcome could have been so much worse had it not been for two bystanders who fearlessly entered the building and helped her escape. This happened back on April 25th in the town of Star Valley Ranch. A woman named Sonia Knowles was in her kitchen. She was making lunch. She was cooking with oil, and the oil caught fire. The newspaper reports that in her attempts to put it out, the fire spread to the entire kitchen, so I'm guessing that she tried to stop the fire with water, which, you know, common sense, right? That's what you do when you got a fire, but not when it's a grease fire. You add water to that mix, and what you're going to get is just a huge a gout of flame. So you want to try to smother the flames. You know, you can use flour. You can use, I don't know if you can use baking soda or not, but again, the You don't want to put water on it. I don't have firsthand experience with that. I have secondhand experience with that. When I was a kid, and my older brother had some of his reprobate friends over to the house one summer day, and there was a grease fire, and one of these morons put the pan underneath the sink and turned on the water, and I got to see for myself this huge gout of flame go up and scorch the ceiling. So, yeah, don't put water on a grease fire. Anyway, in this case, the fire ended up spreading to the entire kitchen. Sonia Knowles, in her attempt to try to escape, fell down a set of stairs. She hit her head. She became trapped in the home. Scott Sorensen was next door at the time. He was there to help his wife finish up a job for a construction cleanup company. He was in the garage. He was getting ready to leave for the day when a neighbor came running up and said, hey, the house next door is on fire. That neighbor was able to call 911. Sorensen began running up to the burning home. 911 dispatchers had instructed the neighbor to check on propane tanks. They saw a 5-gallon tank that they were able to move. Sorensen then ran up to the front door, which was locked. He knocks, he rings the doorbell, and he hears Sonia Knowles calling out for help inside. So he kicked in the door. He said he initially couldn't see anything because of the thick black smoke, so he yelled again, asking where she was. He heard her answer down the set of stairs. He said, I took a deep breath. I pulled my shirt over my nose. I went in. He said, a few feet in, I was hit with the heat, and it took everything out of me. He said, there's just no air in there. He said, so I had to go back outside. And I asked her, is there another way in? And she said, downstairs through the basement. So then he runs down. He had to kick in that door as well because it was locked. He said, I ran in, ran up the stairs. He said, I saw her feet about halfway up. He was able to grab Knowles by the hand and lead her down the stairs. When they got down to the bottom, another neighbor showed up, and the two were able to help get Sonia Knowles to safety. Sorensen said at that point, Sonia was disoriented. She had multiple burns on her face, her neck, her arms. But again, you know, because of the quick action of the first neighbor to call 911, Mr. Sorensen, and then Matt Beal, who was the second neighbor who actually went into the home. It looks like Sonia Knowles is going to recover and is going to be okay. So, again, in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing to help a stranger in need. Those good neighbors there in eastern Idaho, thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, including bad news out of Connecticut, where the Glock ban bill cleared the last legislative hurdle early this morning, now on its way to Governor Ned Lamont's desk. We've got more armed citizen stories for you as well, and we are continuing to keep our eyes on courts across the country. You know, the DOJ filing suit in a federal court in Colorado, taking on Denver's ban on so-called assault weapons. But we've got some outstanding cases, not like still outstanding, right? We have some cases we are still waiting on decisions from the Third Circuit and other circuit courts regarding our right to keep and bear arms, and we are carefully eyeing up the courts, and we'll be reporting on those decisions just as soon as they come down. So be sure to check it out. Again, check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free. Oh, and don't listen to AI Slot. It's going to see you in the wrong place.